West Side welcome to Mr. Dan Sullivan.
Well, I'm glad. It's good. I was reading about Moses' grandpa, right? And you hear Moses' grandpa, and you think, Moses' grandpa, like, who is that guy? That's got to be pretty intense. It was Levi. Levi, one of the 12 sons of Jacob, was Moses' grandpa. Think that through for a minute. How wild is that? So between them was Moses' dad. And Moses' dad, it doesn't say much about him. We figure he probably worked and had a job and did stuff because he was a slave. Yeah, like a whole generation of slaves. And then a whole nother generation of slaves that Moses and Aaron and Miriam were all in that second generation of slaves. And the math gets kind of weird because it's 400 years, but it's 225 years, but it's three generations. And yeah, but they were real people. So my grandpa, I mean, how many people in here had a grandpa? Most of us. Okay, good. My grandpa during the Depression would go down Pigeon Creek and ask people that lived on Pigeon Creek, hey, can we use your yard? We're going to garden. And him and his dad, my great-grandpa, and his brothers would bucket water out of Pigeon Creek to water these gardens that went all up Pigeon Creek. And people would have food, and they would have more food, but the people that they would garden with would have food. Isn't that wild? Like, I heard that story when my grandpa died. Like, he probably thought it was insignificant. He probably thought, no big deal. Moses' grandpa, Levi, for the honor of their sister, went and killed a whole city of people, right? Violent Levi. I have a son named Levi. If you ask me which one of my kids is the most violent, I will tell you it's Levi. We did not make that happen. It's just, when you're the third son, you got two older brothers, you know. You got to be scruffy, yeah. So there's Levi's son, Moses' dad. There's this whole generation of people, and they're slaves. We know that some of their slave work was shepherding because the Egyptians hated sheep, but they needed to take care of them, so all that. You think that felt pretty worthless, being a slave? What am I working for? What am I doing? Everything I do goes to Pharaoh, right? There's probably people mining, working in mines, where they're just treated like another pack animal, right? Just another piece of machinery, slaves. Mining. They bring up this gold, and they give it to all the rich people in Egypt, and the rich people in Egypt decorate themselves with it. Talk about just a sense of worthlessness about what you're doing. But then the Exodus happened. And there's this one funny little command in the Exodus. He says, every woman needs to go to her neighbor's house, and any woman who lives in her house, and ask for gold and silver jewelry and for clothing. You'll put them on your sons and your daughters, and you will plunder the Egyptians. You're the slaves. You're beaten down. And you're just going to go door to door to your Egyptian neighbors. Hey, I'm a Hebrew slave, and I'd like to have all your gold and all your silver, all your polo, all your Tommy Hilfiger and Ralph Lauren. And after about seven of those plagues, people were like, take it and get out of my neighborhood. Take all my gold. Take all my silver. Take all my clothes. I don't want any of this stuff. I just want my cows to not be dead. I just want my bedroom to not be full of frogs. Take this stuff. And it says they plundered the Egyptians. So there's this whole generation of slaves mining, toiling, suffering, mining gold. gathering gold thanklessly. They're not getting paid for it, right? They just get to live another day as a slave. And then they plunder the Egyptians and they haul all this gold out of Egypt. And you know what happens next? Exodus 25, that was Exodus 3. Exodus 25, make an ark of acacia wood. Its length is to be 3 feet 9 inches. Its width 2 feet 3 inches. Its height 2 feet 3 inches. You're overlay it with pure gold, both inside and outside. You must overlay it. You're to make surrounding border of gold over it. You're to cast 4 gold rings for it and put them on its 4 feet with 2 rings on one side, 2 rings on the other. Do you think that slave? No, I'm getting ahead of myself. So they make the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant. You've seen Indiana Jones. The Ark of the Covenant. This is the holy place where God sits. He resides. He is enthroned between the angels on the lid of the Ark of the Covenant. There it is. That Ark of the Covenant is carried through the wilderness. It's carried across the Jordan River. And the Jordan is at flood stage. And if you go by the Ohio and you see flood stage, huge, right? Levites carry that sucker. And when their foot gets ready to hit the water, it all stands up like a wall because it's the Ark of the Covenant. The Nile River says, or the Jordan River says, I do not touch the Ark of the Covenant. And they march across the Ark of the Covenant, where for one day a year, your sins as a Jewish man would be atoned for when the blood of a sacrificial lamb hit that lid. When it was sprinkled on that lid, that priest came out, they blew a horn. All my sins have been atoned for the whole past year. If I can make it home without sinning, I can go to sleep at peace. So do you think that slave in that mindless job with no thanks knocks that rock off the wall of the cave and looks at it and knows, I hold in my hands the box that will represent the atonement of everyone's sins? Probably not. Was that guy important? Yes, he was. Maybe not individually, because they could kill him off and send in another slave. But he was important. He was important that he did that. And I just wonder, you know, C.S. Lewis says for the first 10,000 years we're in heaven, the most used word is going to be, ah! Oh! Ah! Oh! Ah! Ah! As we're all realizing, right? There's going to be some dude spend his whole life underground, and they're going to be like, so what'd you do? He's like, I dug rocks. And then they're going to come marching through, and you guys will see me carrying that thing, right? Maybe not me. And they'll be like, dude, you're the dude that cut the ore out of the rock to make this part of the wing here. Oh! And then it'll all start over again. It is super easy to feel like your job is worthless. It is super easy, talking about giving bags to homeless people. It's super easy to think, gosh, I just gave him a bag last week. I just gave him a bag last week. I just gave her a bag last week. I just gave her a bag last week. You might, I bet, I love my church. I bet nobody has as many people fall asleep during their sermons as I do. Just going to say.
They did whatever day. Whenever I was
there, more of them fell asleep. More fell asleep when you, okay, well.
They actually lost a few, didn't they?
It could be. They all wake up. We're 0 for 0 so far. Sometimes you're up there preaching and you look out at the crowd and you're like, what am I doing? Sometimes you bend over backwards to care for an addict and his family, and it's all awesome, and then it's not. And you're like, what am I doing? What have I accomplished? Is anybody, I mean, am I going to just be referred to as Levi's dad? I mean, is that the only thing I'm going to be known for? Is that the only thing I'm going to be accomplished? Because we don't know Moses. Moses' dad's name is only mentioned in one line to talk about Moses. Guess what? It's not about you making a name for yourself. It says in Revelation, Jesus has a name tag that he puts on you that's a secret nickname known only to you and him. Matt gives me Sully, right? You can all see this. You all know that my nickname is Sully. I got a nickname with Jesus that none of y'all are ever going to know. We're that close. What? Yes. And you do too. Jesus goes into Jerusalem. He's there for the Passover. And it says, this is in John 2, many believed in his name when they saw the signs that he was doing, but Jesus, on his part, did not entrust himself to them because he knew all people and he needed no one to bear witness about man, for he himself knew what was in man. Jesus did not let his identity be defined by anybody except for God. He didn't get excited when he preached an awesome sermon, and he didn't get down when he totally bombed and misquoted John 3:16. He did not get prideful when every prayer was getting answered, and he didn't despair. I mean, he despaired some, but he didn't give up when God did not answer him. He drew his identity from who God said he was, and he didn't entrust his identity to anybody. That's pretty precious. Your identity is really a precious, precious thing, right? And isn't that always, I mean, I always get that. Who's the pastor out there? You know, here's the church. Who's the pastor at that church? Like, that guy is it. That's the whole identity of the whole church, is that whoever that guy is. Like, the whole identity of Westminster is Dan Sullivan. Oh, those poor people. They're awesome in ways that I'm not awesome. Jesus didn't entrust his identity to anybody. God has entrusted his identity to you. He puts it on you. He puts his identity in you. Do you know, if you follow the word glory through the scriptures, that there's actually, glory is a thing. I mean, it's like a thing when it talks about glory. And it says in one part that God won't share his glory with anyone. So there's only one glory, and God won't share it with anyone. But then there's other places where Jesus has glory. And Christ in you is the hope of glory. Wait a minute. If there's only one glory and you can have it, what do you have? You have Christ in you. It's Christ's glory in you is that glory. It's not your own glory, because your own glory isn't really glory. It's fake. Christ in you is the hope of glory. So, all of that comes back around to Ephesians 3. Whatever you're doing, it has value because it's not about what you're doing. It's about what God's doing in you. Paul prays. He says, I pray according to the riches of his glory, he may grant you strength with power through his spirit in your inner being so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. Why should Christ dwell in your hearts through faith? So that you will be rooted and grounded in love and will have strength to do a good job mining gold. No. Have strength to preach awesome sermons or to have an excellent show or, you know, all build awesome houses, drive a bus like a pro, like a boss, chaplain, policeman. No. Although all that's good. rooted and grounded in love, may have the strength to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and the length and the height and the depth, and to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge. Christ's love is our goal. I could dig rocks and never see the light of day if I've got the love of Christ in me. I could preach to 345 sleeping people if I've got the love of Christ in me, right? That's what makes it all have a purpose. And then all of a sudden you have these awesome epic grandkids that lead everybody out of Israel. No, I don't know what you... But that's my encouragement. I was praying, what do we do? Be encouraged, you guys. You guys, you know, I'm speaking generally, right? Be encouraged, folks, in our ministry. It's not about the ministry. The ministry is great, and the ministry is awesome, and it's fruitful, and God brings great fruit from it. But His main work is in us, that we comprehend how wide and long and high and deep is the love of God in Christ. All right. God bless you. That's good.